Inside Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, the OVB online podcast for the Tour de France. For 3 weeks, we accompany team manager Ralf Denk and the biggest and most successful German cycling team through the Tour de France. Do you have questions for Ralf Denk? Send them to tobias.ruf@ofbmedia.de. And now, enjoy the new episode.
Richard Carapaz has won the 18th stage of the Tour de France. The general classification riders are holding back on the first of three Alpine stages. There is no change. We go over to France, to the foot of the mountain, as he just told me, to the team manager of Red Bull, Bora Hansgrohe. Hello to Ralf Denk.
Cheers and have a good evening. Back to Rosenheim.
Exactly. Let's start with the winner. Carapaz tried again and again during this tour. Today it paid off. Strong team performance, strong finish by him. All in all, a very well-deserved victory, I think. What do you say?
Well, absolutely. So well-deserved for the team, but also for Richard himself, because I have said time and again in this podcast here, the teams that are not fighting for the general classification for the podium, they are riding very passively, in my opinion. I have to exclude EF specifically today because they rode very, very aggressively. This stage win was almost forced or achieved with a crowbar, and they were represented in the groups again and again, attacked early, brought people back, and Richard definitely won deservedly.
But he was also the best of the lead group. The guys who were left, who rode into the final climb together, a deserved winner and a great racer.
I can only agree with that. So a strong performance also from Mats Pedersen and Little Trek. The Dane wins the intermediate sprint and effectively decides the battle for green. So the duty of the chronicler is hereby fulfilled. Let's come to you. What is the mood at the foot of the mountain?
The mood is good because we rode a very good race. We then set the pace on the final climb, first with Maxim Van Gils, then with Jai Hindley. It was a fast pace that Jai Hindley set because there were not many left. There were maybe only 10, 12 riders remaining, but it was not the kind of pace where we could create gaps. For that, the final climb was also not difficult enough. You cannot compare that to the final climb tomorrow, Alpe d'Huez, which is much longer, much harder and steeper. And today was more of what we call in cycling terms, a rolling climb where you could not make any differences, but you could certainly tire out the protagonists who are fighting for the podium here to some extent. And that was also, to some extent, our strategy because we were still represented with a relatively large number of riders.
And the strategy paid off completely, is what I'm hearing.
Yes, well, as I said, we are happy with the day. Remco also felt good throughout the day, and that works for us.
Exactly. We saw Jan Tratnik at the front for a moment. He was mixing it up a bit when the groups were still in the formation phase. Was he again, like what you said about Jai Hindley yesterday, was he again the one you send ahead to have a bit of security? Regarding the topic of control, what was the idea behind that? Or did it just happen as the race unfolded?
No, that's already, I said that yesterday too, when such a large group and at times there were more than 30 riders out in front ahead of the main pack, then you have to be present. You can't just sit in the main pack. And that's why Jan Tratnik was up front. But you could really tell that almost three races were happening at once today. The fight for the green jersey, the fight for the stage win, and then the riders fighting for the podium here. And that is why we saved some energy and Jan did not go all out, but instead he came back to the main pack.
Exactly. There is a lot of discussion and speculation about Team UAE. Some things you do not need to speculate about. You can see them. Adam Yates yesterday, Brandon McNulty had to end the Tour de France. Wellens, Vermeersch also having problems. There seems to be a virus going around. What have you heard? What are you picking up?
Yes, there is a stomach virus going around. Whether it is just a stomach virus or if it is more, we do not know. The teams are, of course, keeping very quiet about it, but Mauro Gianetti, my colleague from UAE Emirates, also confirmed that in an interview yesterday.
And that is, of course, really tough when you have to go into the final of the Tour de France so weakened. And you saw it yesterday too, Adam Yates. He suffered like a dog all alone, and then he still got help from Tim Wellens. But that is really, really tough, and I have great respect for the riders who drag themselves to the end of the stages when you are sick, when you cannot keep any food down, when you might have a fever. That is, you really need great resilience and respect for the riders.
So what does that mean now for Pogacar and Del Toro? I mean, Felix Großschartner seems to be fit. He is also a man for the mountains. Niels Polite, I believe, is generally indestructible, that man. He also says he feels good. Is that enough? Is that a big disadvantage? Well, we have two extremely tough mountain stages now. Then it is Paris. Then it is over.
Is it still such a big disadvantage at this stage?
I have also said, or often said in recent days, that we are not the ones who have to make the race difficult now and attack, because taking 4 minutes of Pogacar on the final weekend, I think that is utopian, unless he is deathly ill. And as of today, we are sitting relatively safely on the podium. I was a bit surprised today that specifically the team Decathlon around Paul Secker was relatively defensive today. I would have thought there would be real fireworks today, but they also held back because they are currently not on the podium, and maybe they were also saving their strength for tomorrow, or maybe they just couldn't.
Yes, but I actually would have expected a somewhat larger wave of attacks.
What measures does a team take when a situation like this occurs?
Yes, the riders are separated. It is already standard practice for most teams here that the classic traditional double rooms no longer exist, and that the riders have single rooms. That is already good, so that when something like this happens, you do not infect each other. But if you have a sick or semi-sick racer, then you actually don't let them eat with the group either. Then you actually don't let him travel to the start or from the finish to the hotel by bus. But he sits in a car and only has one driver with him, but keeping him away from the rest of his teammates. That is actually the most important measure.
Right. Before we get into the Alpe de Juez stories that await us on Friday and Saturday, let's choose the time. Today is, I think, a good, perhaps the last opportunity for one of our background topics. Let us talk about the topic of safety today. I have also received listener questions about this. Niklas Heiberger wants to know, why are no fences or air fences, as one knows them from racetracks in motorsport, installed on descents with a high risk of crashes?
Yes, it is an overarching topic. There are already efforts and initiatives in professional cycling to make it safer. And a working group has been formed for that. The working group is called SAFER. It includes representatives from the riders, representatives from the teams, the Union Cycliste Internationale, and also the race organizers. And primarily all four mentioned parties want cycling to become safer. But each of the four parties mentioned naturally has their own interests, and that is why it is super, super difficult. For example, securing routes better with barriers, padding, and so on. That is obviously a huge challenge when you are racing 200 kilometers from point A to point B. The race organizers hold the view that cycling is all about history. You have to race from point A to point B every day at the Tour de France. If you want to create more safety on circuits, that is obviously much easier. So if I ride 200 kilometers from A to B, I have to secure 200 kilometers, which is actually not possible because you can ask yourself the question, where do you start? Where do you stop? If you race on circuits, let's say circuits that are 10 or 15 kilometers long, then you can obviously do much more because then I only have to secure 15 kilometers. Is it the charm of the Tour de France to race more on circuits? I do not know. The beautiful television images are created more when you drive a long way from A to B and when you also have camera cuts from the right and left of the route. So those are many, many discussions. But now back to the listener's question. That is deliberately not done because you simply cannot secure it over 200 kilometers like in motorsport or skiing. The Strive, for example, in Kitzbühel, a very well-known ski race that has a length of 6, 8, 9 kilometers. You can, of course, secure that perfectly, but securing 200 kilometers, super difficult.
Then let's approach it from the other side. Christoph Eiser sent me a long message. He comes from a background of functional training and parkour and says that in BMX, mountain biking and skateboarding, controlled falling, rolling, and absorbing impact are trained as a matter of course. Let's summarize that as crash and fall training. Does that exist in road cycling?
No. What does exist is that teams hire downhill coaches. That exists for racers who might have a bit of a need, meaning those who are afraid or those who perhaps aren't as technically refined. You can train that to a limited extent. But you never turn a bad downhill skier into a good one just by training. There is no specific crash training because there is also very, very limited time for the whole thing, meaning the downhill runs, technique, or even crash training. We have a 10-month season. We have so many training camps. We have already talked about how often the guys are away from home, then the race calendar over 10 months and so on. That is all very, very, very limited. But a good basic training, especially in the youth sector, helps. And that is why our scouting approach is now very advanced. Or very broad, so that we definitely scout in mountain biking, in cyclocross, and also in road cycling. Because that is where you learn skills like a Peter Sagan or a Mathieu van der Poel. I can only speak about Peter Sagan here. He was on our team for a long time. He hardly ever fell because he was such a master of bike handling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that means instead of doing that training there, you find ways beforehand. Mm. Actually, a smart start.
Yes, well, as I said, if the guys, instead of riding on the road for 3 hours in the winter, wrapped up warm at 0 degrees, it is much better if they ride in the woods somewhere. You learn so much more about bike handling there, and that is also part of our strategy, our training. But also that we take a very close look at the junior categories, especially in mountain biking and cyclocross, because those skills always help you. And you can see it now with Paul Six. He also comes from cyclocross. What a great bike handler he is.
Absolutely. The topic of rider equipment is also discussed time and again. Is there a current status on that? How could we ensure more safety through equipment?
Yes, primarily safety would be improved if you took the speed out. Yes, that means all the equipment, starting with the tires, the rims, the aerodynamics of the wheels, the aerodynamics of the handlebars, the aerodynamics of the helmets, and the aerodynamics of the clothing. It is all really fast, of course. And a hobby rider who has been cycling for a long time, perhaps 20 or 30 years, notices that you might have averaged 27 kilometers per hour in training back then, and today an average of 30 is almost standard for a well-trained hobby rider. But that is also largely because the equipment you can buy today is so much faster than road bikes were 20 or 30 years ago, and this speed does not always bring safety in cycling or in professional cycling. And you could remove safety and you could increase safety if you took out speed. But there I have a conflict of interest again, because of course the manufacturers invest in us because they want to make the bikes faster and faster. If we were to ride with standard bikes now, which are slower, meaning not as aerodynamic, if we were to use more spokes again, if we use slower tires, well, then the industry would no longer invest in professional cycling because that is the platform for making their products faster and better. So that is another conflict of interests. And well, that can be discussed for a very, very long time. And in the committee or in the Safer Air Working Group, many, many fruitful discussions are taking place. But the ideal solution, we haven't found that in this working group yet either.
And we won't find him today either. Speaking of the king, the Queen stage is Saturday, but things really heat up tomorrow. It starts at 2 o'clock. Expected arrival is around 5:15. It goes from Gap to Alpe d'Huez, 128 kilometers will be ridden. We start with a category 2 climb, then move into category 1, where it gets steeper, followed by a category 2 climb before heading up to Alpe d'Huez. We also head up Alpe d'Huez on Saturday, but Alpe d'Huez is not the same as Alpe d'Huez. Tomorrow is the classic climb, the great myth of Alpe d'Huez. That one is being ridden tomorrow. What does that mean?
Well, there is someone who has not yet won Alpe d'Huez. His name is Tadej Pogačar.
And for those following the career of Tadej Pogačar, well, Paris-Roubaix comes to mind. He wants to add his name to those lists. It leads one to assume, if he is healthy, that he will give his all tomorrow to conquer the legend of Alpe d'Huez. That is my guess. What is yours?
Yes, it is definitely a myth. So, for those who have not been to Alpe d'Huez, it is a purpose-built village at 1,800 and something meters. The mountain road up there is 15 kilometers long, and on average about 9 to 10%. It is relatively wide, the road up there. And it is also called the Mountain of the Dutch. Apparently, many Dutch people won there in the past, and the record is still held by Marco Pantani from the 90s with a solid 36 minutes. And there is naturally speculation, can Pogačar break a record tomorrow or not break it? I expect a fierce battle for the podium tomorrow because it is such a prestigious mountain. It will definitely begin tomorrow after Alpe d'Huez. The mountain has been closed for 2 days. It is being besieged in a positive sense by spectators. They are camping there, having barbecues and preparing for tomorrow. It is, of course, a mega backdrop, a very, very large open-air stadium tomorrow. And I believe the weather is also forecast to be quite good. So it will be a cycling festival tomorrow. And I think that at the latest, at the foot of the mountain, the last breakaway riders will have been caught, and then there will be a race of the favorites for the record, for the prestigious victory, and for the podium of the Tour de France.
So your strategy is to protect Remco, get him into position, and then he will likely have to handle the climb up Alpe d'Huez on his own.
Exactly. So we will naturally try with Jai Hindley, with Maxim van Gils, to stay with Remco as long as possible. But ultimately, every one of the captains will be on their own. And we are hoping for good legs from Remco and the entire team.
All right. A listener, Markus Holle, contacted me today. He is not far from Grenoble, heading to Alpe d'Huez today. His racing bike and others were stolen overnight. I know many who are there are listening to us both. Ralph, for those on site, keep a close eye on your equipment. And Markus, all the best to you. So tomorrow, my colleague Corbinian Sauter will take over part 1 of Alpe d'Huez. I will be back on Saturday for part 2 of Alpe d'Huez. Ralph, all the best to you for tomorrow. Thank you very much for today and best regards to France.
Thanks, you're welcome, and greetings to Rosenheim.
That was the latest edition of Inside Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, the podcast from OVB Online on the Tour de France. You can find the podcast on all common podcatchers and on the websites of OVB Media and Ippen Media. Thanks for listening and see you in the next episode.